ability, you know, to work, to fulfill his, you know, to do their job. They're not able, they said, we're not able to work in concert, right? At the end of the previous chapter, they inform the Lord. They say, they actually conclude their prayer by saying, with a request to the Lord, they say, O Supreme Self, this is the demigods praying to, I guess, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu or Vishnu, please give us, who are created in the beginning from the Mahatattva, the total cosmic energy, your kind directions on how we shall act. Kindly award us your perfect knowledge and potency so that we can render you service in the different departments of the subsequent creation. So of course, you know, the Lord hears that, and Maitreya says, the Lord thus heard about the suspension of the progressive creative functions of the universe due to the non-combination of his potencies, such as the Mahatattva. The supreme, powerful Lord then simultaneously entered into the 23 elements with the goddess Kali, his external energy, who alone amalgamates all the different elements. So basically what's going on here is that, you know, Krishna is being informed by the, Vishnu is being informed by the demigods that, hey, something's kind of not quite right here. It's not, things aren't working. Please help. And so Vishnu gets involved, and he, as we just heard, he gets goddess Kali. He enters into these 23 elements. He enlivens them. And then the next thing that happens is we're hearing about here. Oh, no. Then the next thing that happens is he, after he enters into the elements by his energies, all the living entities were enlivened in different activities, just as one is engaged in work after awakening from sleep. So it's explained elsewhere that, you know, at the end of every millennium, that's basically at the end of every day of Brahma, after it's 4.3 billion years, there is a partial annihilation. And at that time, all the jivas who didn't make it back to Godhead by that, the end of that day, get withdrawn into the body of Vishnu for 4.3 billion years. And then after that period of time, the whole thing is put into action again. So this could be describing, I think most likely this is describing that situation, that time. So, the living entities are awakened again. And then the next thing that happens, we hear about in today's verse, is that after the, when the 23 principal elements were set in action by the will of the Supreme, the gigantic universal form, or the Vishvarup body of the Lord, came into existence. So that's the next thing, okay? So, you know, the demigods are expressing their inability to make it happen. Krishna gets involved, or Vishnu gets involved. He brings Kali, you know, goddess Kali. He activates the 23 elements. He awakens the sleeping jiva souls, and then this Vishvarup, the universal form, is manifest. And Prabhupada says in the purport that this it's very much appreciated by the impersonalists, and that's significant. That's a significant point. And he also says a couple sentences down that Lord Krishna exhibited this Virat Roop, Vishvarup, to Arjuna just to convince the impersonalists that he is the original personality of Godhead. Now, that's also a significant point. There's a big time lapse here, you know, because it was manifested way back at the beginning of the millennium, right? You know, and then probably some we're halfway through the day of Brahma now, right? And anyway, so a long time afterwards, Krishna's going to make use of the same universal form that was manifested back at the beginning to convince the impersonalists. Now, it's interesting that he showed it to Arjuna. Does anybody know the reason why Krishna manifested this universal form to Arjuna? Huh? Yeah, but why did he involve Arjuna in the whole thing? Why didn't he just manifest it? I'll give you the answer, okay? Huh? That's right. That's the answer. Arjuna asked to see it. But it was more than just curiosity, because it certainly wasn't that he needed more convincing himself. Because in the 12th chapter of in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the universal form is the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. But in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, starting with after Arjuna heard the four most important verses of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna made this statement, okay? He says, You are the supreme Brahman, the ultimate, the supreme abode and purifier, the absolute truth and the eternal divine person. You are the primal God, transcendental and original, and you are the unborn and all-pervading beauty. All the great sages, such as Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyasa, proclaim that of you, this of you, and now you yourself are declaring it to me. And he goes on to say, O Krishna, I totally accept this truth, all that you have told me. Neither the gods nor demons, O Lord, know thy personality. Wait. I'm getting to that. So it's clear here that Arjuna doesn't need any more convincing. He doesn't need to see. He's not asking, Krishna, you know, I'm still a little bit shaky on this, doubtful. Can you show me a universal form so I really know? No, he knows. At this point, he already knows. He's convinced and happy and enlightened that, you know, Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. And the reason why he asked to see the universal form, that's Prabhupada reveals that to us in the beginning of the 11th chapter. Prabhupada says in the purport, Arjuna is very enlightened and is glad he has a great friend like Krishna. But now he is thinking that although he may accept Krishna as the source of everything, others may not. So in order to establish Krishna's divinity for all, he is requesting Krishna in this chapter to show his universal form. So Arjuna is thinking like a preacher already. Okay? A couple other sentences in the purport says, Prabhupada says, in order to convince others in the future who may think that Krishna is an ordinary person, Arjuna desires to see him actually in his universal form, to see how he is acting from within the universe. Then down here, a couple sentences further on, Prabhupada says, Arjuna wants to see the universal form to set a criterion, for in the future there may be so many imposters who would pose themselves as incarnations of God. So in other words, it's interesting. The universal form was manifest way back in the beginning of the day of Brahma. Here it is, like, I don't know how many billions and billions, well, millions and millions of years later, Krishna's making use of that, using Arjuna as his instrument for a preaching purpose, which is that to deal with these imposters, for starters, say if somebody comes along and they claim to be an incarnation of God, then they can just be said, well, okay, you're an incarnation, show your universal form. Show your universal form. Of course, they won't be able to do it. And that'll be good for preaching, because then, people who are Vaishnav preachers could say to innocent people, because, you know, the innocent people is the ones we're concerned about, this person is claiming to be an incarnation of God. Well, when Krishna was present 5,000 years ago, he manifested his universal form. Ask this person to manifest his universal form. Okay? This is for people who are on the fence. You know, you died in the world atheists. See, because impersonalists aren't necessarily atheists. They can be, but they're not necessarily. And they also tend to accept scriptures. Well, classic examples are Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Prakashananda Saraswati. They were impersonalists, but when they heard from Lord Chaitanya, they became converted. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya went on to become a great Vaishnava, and Prakashananda Saraswati, at least he acknowledged that Lord Chaitanya was correct. I don't know if it's no mention of him becoming like a full-on devotee, but so people in that category, you know, this will be beneficial for them, because then, you know, the person, if somebody's claiming to be God, okay, you say, let me see your universal form, and when he can't show it, then the Vaishnava preachers can say, look, this is not an incarnation of God. They can't show the universal form. So there's a preaching dimension to this purport here. Another interesting point that Prabhupada makes here in the moving forward in the purport here is that the archa vigraha, or worshipful deity in the temple, is a similar manifestation of the Lord for the neophytes. And so when I read that, I was thinking to myself, well, does that mean that deity worship, because it says here the worship of the archivigraha is a similar manifestation for neophytes. So is deity worship for neophytes? Is Prabhupada saying that? Yes, deity worship is for neophytes. And I'll explain. If a neophyte worships the deity, he becomes a Paramahamsa. That's See, yeah, to start off with, we're neophytes. And Krishna, out of his causeless mercy, out of his kindness and his mercy, he's made these arrangements. He's arranged for this form, the Archa-Vigraha, which he clearly, Prabhupada says here in the purport, it's not an eternal form, but it has, because of its contact with the Lord, it's non-different from the eternal form of the Lord, although it's a temporary manifestation, similar to the Vishvarup, the universal form. See? So, yeah, for people who are neophytes, if they worship the deity, if they properly understand and appreciate the universal form, if they properly chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, neophytes will gradually become elevated to the platform of Paramahamsa. So that's there too. And the big picture of the whole thing is this, that Krishna wants all the living entities within the material world to return back home, back to Godhead. And back in the last chapter, about, I think it's text 24, where there's a very interesting purport. I'll just read a few sentences from it, where it kind of makes this, Prabhupada makes a point, this point in the purport. He says, referring to the creation and this whole, the manifestation of the universal form and everything. Prabhupada says, the whole process is to enliven the sleeping conditioned souls to the real life of spiritual consciousness, so that they may thus become as perfect as the ever-liberated souls in Vaikuntha Lokas. Since the Lord is Satchidananda Vigraha, he likes every part and parcel of his different potencies to take part in the blissful rasa, because participation with the Lord in his eternal rasa lila is the highest living condition, perfect in spiritual bliss and eternal knowledge. See, so from this we can understand the purpose behind the whole creation, as directly stated here by Prabhupada. It's to give all the parts and parcels, all the jivas, an opportunity to become ever liberated souls like those in the Vaikuntha Lokas. And it's even suggesting, unless I'm misunderstanding it somehow, something even beyond that. It says here, since the Lord is Satchidananda Vigraha, he likes every part and parcel of his different potencies to take part in the blissful rasa, because participation with the Lord and the eternal rasa lila is the highest living condition. So it's kind of like, I mean, when I read that, I think I'm hearing that Krishna wants the jivas to be in the rasa lila. Let me read it again. It says, since the Lord is Satchidananda Vigraha, he likes every part and parcel of his different potencies to take part in the blissful rasa, because participation with the Lord in his eternal rasa lila is the highest living condition, perfect and spiritual. So in other words, we're meant for something really good. Whether I'm understanding that last couple sentence or not, perfectly accurately or not, certainly it's very clear that he wants everybody to be become as perfect as the ever-liberated souls in the Vaikuntha Lokas, and possibly he's even desiring that souls could be elevated to the participation in the rasa lila. So that's the program. That's the real purpose of the whole cosmic manifestation, to give the souls an opportunity. Yeah. So we're meant to participate in that. In a twofold way. One is personally, we have to get on board ourselves. And then we have to try to be instrumental in helping other people get on board to this program of trying to become elevated to back to the ever-liberated condition of the people and souls in Vaikuntha Loka, or even beyond that. And it starts off... it starts off by just... by using our intelligence, and I'll explain. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, text number, second canto, chapter 2, text, I think it's 35, in the purport, Prabhupada says, intelligence gives one direction like some higher authority, and the living being cannot see, move, eat, or do anything without the use of intelligence. when one fails to take advantage of intelligence, he becomes a deranged man. So that's what happens when you don't take advantage of your intelligence. You become like a deranged man. So, okay, where's this intelligence come from? Okay, hang on. So a living being is dependent on intelligence or the direction of a superior being. Such intelligence is all-pervading. Every living being has his intelligence, and this intelligence, being the direction of some higher authority, Krishna, is just like a father giving direction to his son. The higher authority who is present and residing within every individual living being is the super self, super soul. In other words, Krishna. See? So that's the whole... Krishna's giving every jiva intelligence, every jiva, especially when they come, when that jiva is in the human form of life, has an opportunity to take up spiritual life and go back to Godhead. If you take advantage of the in the lower forms of life, at least this is my understanding, in the lower forms of life, lower than human beings, Krishna's giving those jivas intelligence to just be a dog or be a tree or be a whatever. See? That's what those bodies are all about. Prabhupada didn't go with the idea of instinct. You know, they're doing things. It's Krishna, it's Paramatma, the Supersoul, giving those lower living entities intelligence. It's not instinct. Prabhupada said, what is this instinct, you know? Okay, but when you get to the human form of life, yeah, Krishna gives you intelligence to fulfill your material propensities, but human form of life is special. Krishna, as the Supersoul, is giving the souls in the human body the opportunity, the intelligence, okay, you know, you should do this. You should try to, you know, try to elevate yourself, try to uplift yourself, try to advance spiritually. And then if the living entity is going, no. There's one poor point in the, I think, 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita where it talks about how the living entity is continually rejecting spiritual light. See? So it's an ongoing process. Krishna's trying to, you know, encourage, give that intelligence to the living entity and the soul and the human body. But if the soul rejects it, then Krishna goes, okay, well, what do you want to do now? Okay, you don't want to take my suggestion. What do you? Okay, you want to become a rich fan? All right, well, I'll give you the intelligence how to do that. But the idea is that Krishna is trying. Krishna's there like a coach, you know. He's there. He's trying to elevate. And so just like we heard in this purport here, if somebody doesn't take advantage of the intelligence that Krishna is giving, he becomes a deranged man. So what happens if somebody does take advantage of the intelligence that Krishna is giving? You become a Paramahamsa. You become as good as the ever-liberated. Eventually, you become as good as the ever-liberated souls in the Vaikuntha Lokas. And then possibly even you're promoted to be able to participate in the Rasa Leela. Which is, according to this, is what, you know, Krishna likes that. Krishna wants to see the souls do that. So that's what it's all about. We have to, you know, as I said, get on board ourselves. Take that intelligence that Krishna's giving us. Tesham satate yuktanam bhajatam pratiporvakam dadami buddhiyogam tam yena mam upriyantite. Krishna says, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the intelligence to come to me. So Krishna's giving devotees intelligence how to, you know, become elevated to the highest, to spiritual, perfect spiritual consciousness. We got to do that first, you know, get on board ourselves, and then try to help as many other people as possible. And that's what today is all about. Today is just, we're going out there to try to, you know, give the people, the conditioned souls, the mercy. Let them hear the holy name. Let them see the Vaishnavas. Let them see the devotees chanting and dancing. And, you know, hopefully, while we're doing that, Krishna's in their heart, and he's kind of, you know, prodding them and going, okay, come on, look, this is pretty far out, isn't it? These people seem to, that's nice what they're doing. That, you know, Krishna's going to give them some nudging. There's going to be some pushing there, and hopefully some of them are going to, you know, respond to that in the correct way, in the positive way, and take a step, you know, rather than to continue in their conditioned life of material existence as a result of us going out there today, chanting, and them seeing us and hearing us. They are going to respond to Krishna's promptings from within in the positive way and take a step forward towards, you know, their progressing in spiritual life. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any question?
question. Yeah. It's a question. Okay, question anybody? Okay, so.
Thank you for a very nice class in showing the gradual elevation of the living entity from just an ordinary living entity to a paramahamsa. What's all that noise? Okay, from an ordinary human being to a paramahamsa. So the question arises as to, you speak of rising to a position of being close to the Supreme Lord. And being close to the Supreme Lord, one, of course, manifests, as you said, paramahamsa. So what is the value of being a paramahamsa over being just an ordinary devotee? So in other words, why would I want to be a paramahamsa? That's what I'm saying that you should tell us all. If there's some benefit that you have as a paramahamsa, which you don't have as an ordinary human being, striving and trying to glorify, honor the Supreme Lord. What's my benefit as a paramahamsa, as opposed to being the ordinary striving devotee who is getting bliss and happiness, but is certainly not on the platform of paramahamsa, which is a very high, elevated platform. What's the benefit?
Well, our goal, the goal of devotional service is to...
Do you know it by your heart? Are you going to read it or to heart?
Well, I'm going to do both.
Okay, go ahead.
The goal of devotional service is to reawaken our dormant love for Krishna, and that happens in stages. See, so like Rupa Goswami explains, adoshara tato sadhusanga tatapa, there's different stages. So the idea is that we want to go from a lower stage of appreciation to the highest stage. And then and in the process of doing that, our love for Krishna becomes developed. So obviously we want to get to the perfectional stage of, you know, being...
Okay, what is the benefit of having such love for Krishna as opposed to someone who does not have such love, maybe has a little bit? What's the benefit of having what we call supreme love for Krishna?
Well, to
besides
that person,
being paramahamsa, okay, which well, is just
two,
a word.
Two obvious answers.
An example of how it benefits.
Okay, well, the benefit to that person is you'll be a heck of a lot happier because, you know, the more you love Krishna and the more you're a pure devotee, you're fully experiencing your love for Krishna. And also another benefit is that when the more you develop your love for Krishna, the more you're going to become empowered by bhakti shakti, which is the potency by which Krishna consciousness can be spread. And the more you're going to able to be a sparshamani, which is a devotee who is able to, by their contact, make other people devotees. So those are two benefits. You're just like Prabhupada's spiritual master said to him, go preach in the English language in the West. It'll be good for you. It'll be good for them. So as the more we advance in devotional service, the more we develop our love for Krishna, the better it is for us, of course, and the more... The more effective we're going to be in preaching Krishna consciousness.
Excellent.
We're going to be able to do that with tremendous, much increased
potency.
So what
is this good that you're talking about? It will be good for the people to, as you said, you know, focus upon Krishna and gradually love Krishna, and from love to Krishna, he will feel something, as you were mentioning, it is good for him. Why is it good?
Well, they have to get out of the cycle.
I'm sorry if I'm putting you up.
No, it's okay. I mean, once again, more than one aspect to that answer. We're in the cycle of birth and death. As people develop, awaken their Krishna consciousness, they become liberated from the cycle of birth and death. That's one benefit or one good for the people that will hear this message and actually receive it, accept it. And, of course... you know, they'll develop their love for Krishna. Ultimately, they'll be able to go back to Godhead and get out of the, you know, material world altogether as well.
Yeah. May I add something?
Sure.
Yeah, the most important is that living entities are freed of the miseries, the uncertainties, the doubts, the bewilderment, the complete suffering that they have in the material world. So they become free of all this when one rises to the position of being an individual who is close to Krishna, who is transcendental, who is experiencing transcendental bliss, peace, He no longer has to suffer as ordinary human beings have to. So that is a very great benefit, because you're no longer the same miserable, wretched living entity. You're now happy, but not for one day, not for many days, all the time. That's the difference.
Okay. Thank you very much. Guntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Somebody want to take the microphone? Does anybody know where this microphone goes?